So, my name is Caitlin LaTorre, and I'm going to be interviewing Michelle Maxwell, who is my adoptive mother, in her home on the 24th of March. It's a good day. Okay. So, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yay, I'm glad. Thank you for agreeing to do this interview with me. I appreciate it. It's for my anthropology project.
I'm very, very happy to do so.
Yep. So we'll start off with an interesting question. How did you meet your husband?
I met my husband through a boyfriend that I had.
Okay.
The boyfriend that I had at the time said that he knew this guy and he was going through a divorce, and we were just going to go and kind of hang out with him for the night, and wound up being friends. Broke up with the boyfriend, was still friends with Mike, and then we just kind of started, you know, being a couple.
That's great.
So a couple years in the process. Pretty much it.
Okay. So what's one of the funniest stories or weirdest things that happened between the two of you before you got married?
I think something funny, let's see. One night we had been out at a local bar, mm-hmm. you know, drinking, right? Because we were in our 20s when we met. And we were walking to our car after being out, and you know, we weren't drunk or anything, but I saw these kids' chalk on the ground. Like, some kids must have been playing with chalk on the sidewalk. So I don't know, it just kind of flashed in my head that we you know, the chalk outlines of like people that get shot or whatever. Yeah. So we traced each other's outlines on the sidewalks with the chalk. Just kind of silly.
That's so great.
So it was just kind of something silly. So.
Did you ever did you go back after that to see if they were there?
No. It was just a spur of the moment thing.
That's so good. So. I could totally see you doing that. I feel like if you found chalk today, you would do that just on the ground. Okay, if you could go back and relive any year of your life, what year would you relive and why? Like, what would you do different? Or would you just do the same thing?
I don't really believe in doing something different. Because I think the decisions we make in life lead us to where we are. And I think that even the slightest different thing would result in your life being totally different. Like, if I had made different decisions, like I had the opportunity to stay in Buffalo, and actually they asked me to be a teacher at Buffalo.
Okay.
And if I had done that, I would have never met Mike. I would have never come back home. I would have never met Mike. Phoebe wouldn't be here. Amelia wouldn't be here. My life would be so drastically different. So I think big decisions you kind of make, and you can't regret them, even if sometimes you have that feeling that, you know, you might.
Okay.
But smaller decisions, I think probably one of the things I regret the most, if you have to, you know, pick one, is that I didn't have enough confidence and have enough risk to actually be an artist.
Okay.
I grew up poor, so I always played it safe. I didn't believe in taking out loans to get, you know, I worked my way through college. I wish I had had, you know, more of that kind of personality, that where I would have taken a risk and really done the thing that I love doing instead mm-hmm. of winding up with, you know, the job that I have now.
Yeah.
I wish I had had enough guts to do that, but I didn't. So it's a little late now, but I think that the important things for me were instilling my loves or exposing my kids to what I love and what fulfills me. And then hoping that, you know, they find their own fulfillment in what makes them happy.
That's good. So. going off of the artist aspect, with the jewelry that you showed me.
With our dog.
Hi, Sadie. With the jewelry you showed me, when did you make that?
So I made that when I was in school at Buffalo State.
Okay.
So I went there, it was 88 to 92.
Okay.
And I started out taking, you know, undergrad classes where you have to take like 2D and 3D. And then you had to apply for your intended major. I took two semesters of wood studio, and I took a semester of jewelry, and I loved both. I love woodworking, but decided that longevity-wise, I really liked making things that were smaller, and I loved metal. I loved forging. I loved anodizing. I loved really creating things that, you know, I could see in my head and making them. And I thought that it would be easier for me as a woman to have a jewelry studio rather than have a wood studio where I might need to rely on somebody making bigger pieces.
Okay.
But you had to, you know, you took your foundation classes and then you actually had to apply for your major. So you had to, it wasn't, you know, you couldn't just say, oh, I want to be this. You had to actually have a portfolio and apply to your intended major.
That's cool. And what was your major?
Metalsmithing.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a design, really. It's a design degree. And it's a bachelor's of science, not a bachelor of art, because it is a little bit more technical in nature. So I have a BS instead of a BA.
I mean, that's great. There's a big difference at school whenever I talk to people about, like, BS or BA.
Uh-huh.
At least I know in the STEM field that's how it is. So jumping a little bit to the kids aspect, like with raising kids, what do you think is something that you've learned, like that you weren't expecting to learn?
I thought it'd be really easy. Mike's sister had kids before we did, and my sister had, you know, Lydia, my niece, before mm-hmm. we did, and I had Lydia a lot when my sister was going through a divorce, so I don't know, it just seemed easy, but I guess at that point you could give them back. And you were there for all the fun, right?
Yeah.
So I always knew I wanted kids. I love kids. It's much harder than I thought it would be. I didn't realize the worry and everything that, you know, will never stop.
Yeah.
No matter how old my kids get, you'll always worry about them and make sure that you want to make sure that they're, you know, healthy and happy and leading the life that they want to lead. I've never been the kind of parent where I've put my own, you know, unless it's basic core values like treating people nicely and stuff like that. Never really, you know, how some parents are like, oh, you have to be a lawyer, you have to be a doctor, you have to be this or that. Basically, I always tell my kids that, you know, it's your life. You should live it the way you want as long as you're not hurting other people around you. And, you know, I think the food allergies has been a real
struggle.
And then, you know, Amelia having diabetes and Asperger's on top of it, she's been a real challenge. But I don't think I'd change anything. Just, again, you just, you know, you want your kids' lives to be as, you know, as good as possible. So you try and do whatever you can to make that happen.
Yeah.
So.
If you could give one piece of advice to your kids, like, what would it be? And I guess, like, why why would you give it to them?
I think the most important thing is to be comfortable with who you are, believe in yourself, and believe in what you want to do. So whether it's religion or sexual orientation, life choices, major life choices, if you truly want to be happy, you have to be comfortable with those choices and be prepared to defend those choices if others don't agree with you. We've kind of brought our kids up to be pretty open-minded. I kind of grew up in a house that was a little homophobic. I don't have those views. I think that as long as you are happy and you're in a healthy relationship, so it's not one-sided, yeah, so that you have a partner, whoever that partner is, whether they're a different, you know, race or, you know, the same gender, or it doesn't matter. As long as you have two partners that are honest with each other and respect each other and make each other happy, that's like nobody could ask for anything more in life than that. And if you do make a mistake, again, everybody makes mistakes in life, but it's what you do in, you know, dealing with that mistake that defines you as a person. That, you know, I guess always do the right thing, you know, even though it might be hard sometimes. So I think that's the biggest thing, is find something or someone in life that truly makes you happy. I mean, you're not going to be happy your whole life because life is hard.
Yeah.
But the partner or the lifestyle you choose should make it easier, you know. So if you decide to do drugs, well, that's going to be hard. And that's, if that's a life you choose, then that's, you have to take everything that comes with it. So at a certain point, you know, you've got to trust that you gave your kids the right base values, and then their choices are theirs. Right? They're living their life the way they want, not the way you want. So, I guess, you know, if you're doing something, do it well. Be happy.
That's nice. I guess another question, going off of what you were just saying about, like, choosing a partner to make it easier in life and everything. For example, I know Phoebe and Eric are very happy together. I just want to know, like, your opinion about them, to have something, because I haven't talked to you about it.
What I see, I think it's mutual. Like, I think previous relationships, it's been more one-sided,
mm-hmm,
where one has been a chaser and a chasee,
mm-hmm,
that there's been more invested emotionally on one end than another end. From what I see, I like what I see with Eric and Phoebe. Eric is a really nice kid. He's polite. I think he's intelligent. I think he's, you know, good to Phoebe. And I know Phoebe really likes Eric. So I think it's kind of, it seems more balanced, more mutual. So I like them as a couple. I think they're cute together. I think they're nice together. I think that, you know, they weigh each other out. I think Eric tends to be a little bit more grounded, where Phoebe isn't always.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, my gosh. So what did you think when I came crashing into your life towards the end of high school and just kind of stayed with you guys?
I think you're a wonderful kid. I think that it tears at my heart, knowing the hardships that you have, knowing what you're going through. I don't think you deserve it. I don't think your parents deserve you. I think that you will be successful in life despite them. And I think that you have a lot to be proud of yourself for. I think it really hits home because I also had a parent that left. That was not a good influence. So I understand the struggles you're coming from. And you don't deserve it. I know that there are parents out there that would give their eye teeth for a gig kid like you. And for you to have the roll of the dice to get the parents that don't appreciate that and don't support who you are. It's their loss. I'm reaping the benefit. So I love having you here, and I'm glad that you are comfortable enough in staying here. This house will be always be open to you.
I appreciate you guys taking me in. If you don't mind, would you be willing to share anything you're willing to share about your childhood and like...
Oh, there's a nutshell.
Yeah, you don't have to, obviously. I don't.
So, childhood was odd. We grew up in an abusive situation. The last fond memory I have of my father is when I was 5. So that's a very long time ago. Being, yes. What, 50, almost 53?
Yeah.
So, I have only spoken to him once in the last... 34 years. Yeah, once in the last 34 years. Yeah, 34. Because I was 19 when I stopped speaking to him. And then I spoke to him when Phoebe was about 2. And I wouldn't let him know, like, where I lived or anything like that. We met him out in public. And I made sure to go there well in advance so he wouldn't know what car I was driving. And stayed there after he had left. Just because I didn't want him to know anything about my life or where I lived or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, like, he didn't know that I'd, like, even graduated, even went to college or, you know, graduated college. Or he heard from somebody that I had a kid and I wouldn't, you know, show him a picture or anything like that because I didn't want him seeing her anywhere. My mom was awesome. She was like the best mom you could ever want, but she also grew up in a very abusive, so she let us grow up in an abusive environment because when somebody's abused, they're used to that abuse. It was me actually at age 15 to tell her to get a divorce. And she's like, I'm doing this for you kids. I'm like, oh my God, like, don't do me any favors. So my mom was great. I tended to be very, shy. I was an introvert, definitely. Where my sister was the exact opposite. So I was very into reading books, art, that sort of thing. So I was a tomboy. So, yeah, I could climb a tree faster than any kid in the neighborhood. So typical, you know, we live in the city, but it was like not a bad part of the neighborhood. It is now, but it wasn't when we were growing up. So it was kind of different in the aspect that I think, like here, growing up in the suburbs. Oh, this is the first time I ever lived in the suburbs when I moved to Fairport. I always lived in the city, no matter where I lived. So I'm kind of like a city gal.
Okay.
I like the older houses. I like the history that goes with them. So I've been slowly trying to build this house that we live in now, which was built in 1960, into like an older feel home when you walk in.
It's beautiful. I love it every time I come in.
I like the character. I think that there is a different craftsmanship in the older houses, a different feel to them. I think things were more thought out. They're more personal. They're more, you know, aesthetically pleasing. I think that we've lost that as a society somewhere along the line. I think even cars, you know, older cars were cooler. They had personality, right? They were distinctive. You could see one coming a mile away and you'd be like, oh, I know that's a, you know, that's a T-Bird, or I know that that's a Corvette, or now everything seems more homogenized and more mass produced. And I feel like we're a throwaway society, which is going to, you know, burn us in the end. I think that humans cause a lot of their own downfall, right?
Yeah.
So did we get off topic? Did I answer the question?
Yeah, you answered the question. You talked about other things. That's the whole point of this. I just want to get to know you as well as I can, as I don't already know. Like, kind of touching back to the childhood, but are there any, like, interesting stories you'd like to share? Like, not, they don't have to be super deep or personal or anything, but, like, was there anything dumb you ever did as a kid?
Well, okay, so I think you know the story when I was 4. I don't know, I had the weirdest concept that if I ate Noxzema, like something really cool, like I expected to glow in the dark, right? Okay. So we were in an apartment, we didn't own a house then. So we were in an apartment, it had a really small bathroom, and it didn't have an outside window because it was like in, you know, the interior of the house. Okay. So you could really shut the door and it would be totally really dark in there. So I remember, you know, getting up on the step stool, and I had the jar of Noxzema in my hand and looked in the mirror, and it's pitch black in the bathroom. And I ate some of it and I expected to glow. And I just remember being so horribly, horribly disappointed that I was not glowing. but I can still see the bathroom. I can still, you know, see the placement in my head. Everything, it had like a white porcelain sink and like, you know, an enamel sink. And it was like a pedestal sink. And it was just funny. I was just remembering being so totally disappointed that I didn't glow in the dark. Some other stories, like I remember my sister had, we both had goldfish that we had gotten from a fair, and I wanted to see if the goldfish would swim back up the toilet.
Oh.
So I flushed it down the toilet, but I didn't use mine, I used my sister's, because I didn't want, like, to flush mine down and, like, get rid of mine. So she was so upset at me, because, of course, it didn't come back, right? Like, no fish is going to swim back up the plumbing after it's been in the sewer. So she was pretty ticked at me that I did that. I used to make my sister make up a story every night before we went to bed. Like, she was like a rock solid sleeper. She, like, as soon as her head hit the pillow, she was out. So I'm like, Andrea, make up a story for me. So every night she's like, oh. So finally my mom had to, like, switch our room, so keep my sister up at night, because she had to make it up. She couldn't, it couldn't be like a story that we knew or that she had read. Every night she had to, like, tell me another story. It was really funny. And I had a mouse growing up, so a pet mouse, and his name was Nudge. And it was like the smartest, best mouse ever. So my mom had taken this old bird cage, because we didn't have a lot of money growing up. So she had taken this old bird cage that we had found, and put the really small chicken wire over it, so the mouse couldn't get out of the bars in the cage. And I had it on a TV tray, metal table in my room, mm-hmm. and I never shut the door of the mouse cage. So the door was always open, so it would come out, it would crawl around its cage and crawl around the tray table, and it would never try and get away. When my dog would come, and I've got a picture of that somewhere in my childhood photo album, the dog would whine and it would come and put its head near the door. And the mouse would come out, and they would, you know, they were friends. The mouse would, like, walk on the dog's head, and The dog wouldn't try and eat it. The mouse went everywhere. Like, sometimes I'd bring it to school with me and put it in my desk drawer. Because we had the old desks where the lid lifted up, your writing surface lifted up, and the bottom was, you know, where you put your books and stuff. So it used to spend the day with me at school, and I'd bring it back home in my pocket. And one time I was at a bakery, and I forgot that I had had the mouse on my shoulder, and it peeked. I had long hair, and it peeked out behind my hair, and the woman at the counter freaked because I had a mouse on my shoulder. I would even put him out, like, I'd go outside and read in the backyard and, you know, like, sit on a blanket, and the mouse would never leave me. Like, I would bring him outside and put him on the blanket with me, and the mouse would not leave. It would just, like, it'd like, walk around and crawl on me, and it would not leave me.
A good mouse.
It was unusual. I mean, because that's a mouse. Like, mice are usually like, hey, psh, I'm gone, right? So I was really upset when it was old. It was like 2.5 years old. That's a pretty long time for a mouse. But I was upset when we actually had to put it to sleep because it had a tumor in its head. Mm. And I didn't want it. It was starting to chew on itself. So we had to put it to sleep. But it was such a good, we had good pets growing up. So just some silly stories.
Good. Would you ever get another pet mouse, hoping for it to be the same as the pet mouse Nudge?
I don't think, I mean, I had mice, so after he died, I had mice after that. None of them were like that. Like, you had to lock the cage up, or else they'd be gone. So, I don't know, I just hit it lucky. It was just one of those things that, I don't know if it was just timing, you know, because I spent a lot of time with the mouse. We were very attached to each other. I would call it, and it would, because it had a little house inside its cage, so that's where it actually slept. So I would call it, and it would actually come out of its cage when I, you know, called it. It was just such a good pet. So I was lucky. But I think if you have the right circumstances, you know, animals respond well. But I think animals are like people. Like, some are grumpy, some are mean, some are nice. But I do think environment plays a part in enhancing those personalities.
Yeah.
So.
Like, if you were mean to the mouse, he wouldn't have been so attached.
No, I'm sure it wouldn't have liked me. And I think when I was older, I might not have had as much time for the other mice, too. So it was different than when you're younger.
Yeah.
So I had a pet iguana once for like a couple days, and my mom made me give him back because she didn't want an iguana in the house. I was so bummed. I named him Iggy for Iggy Pop.
Oh. That's so nice. Would you ever get, like, one of your kids a pet mouse?
Well, if they wanted one, they could have one, but they'd have to take care of it. You know what I mean? I think that's the thing. I took care of my mouse. It's like I cleaned its cage and I fed it. My mom didn't do anything, you know.
Okay.
I made sure it had, you know, water and food. I, you know, took care of it. It's different. If they expressed an interest in it, then they could. The struggle with our house has been food, pet food. Like, we had to make sure we could find safe food for the dog before I would even agree to getting one, because I can't have our food be safe and the dog's not safe.
Yeah. Imagine the dog eating food that had, like, eggs or dairy in it, and then licking
one of the kids. Yeah, that'd be bad, right? Yeah, so we had to make sure that their food... And they need to be healthy,
too. Yeah.
Because we did look into getting, like, a hamster or something like that, but we couldn't find food that wasn't cross-contaminated with peanut stuff.
Oh.
So, and kudos to Amelia, because she took shots for 5 years so that Phoebe could have that dog.
That's good.
So, yeah. So, it's nice. I think having pets are good for kids.
Helps teach responsibility.
Yeah. Should teach responsibility.
Gives them a companion.
Yeah.
someone to be with.
Good memories, right?
Yeah.
It's all good childhood memories. Should have a pet in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Now you have a pet dog, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Think of all the fun times, the funny things. You told me stories about them eating spaghetti.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun.
She's a good puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad used to have birds for my sister and I. And then since we were going between him and my mom's house when we were very young, the birds died one weekend. Aww. And so he got identical looking birds and didn't tell us.
It's a parent thing.
And like the second set of birds died when we were in fourth grade, and I didn't find out about it till like my junior year of high school.
Oh dear.
So pets are fun.
Yeah, they are fun.
Yeah. Let's see. Going off of the stories that your sister told you when you were younger before going to sleep, can you remember any of them? Like,
no, I don't remember any of them.
Would you tell Mealy and Phoebe stories before going to sleep ever?
Yeah, I did. And we played a game in the car, too, where they would have to give us three things. And then we would have to make a story around that. So that was, you know, one of the games we played in the car. I actually took a class at Writers and Books because I love children's stories. And I took a class at Writers and Books for, you know, writing children's stories. And I actually wrote a couple that I have somewhere around, I'm sure, on the computer. Because I thought that would be a neat thing to do, is to actually, you know, publish some. But there's a lot of rules for it. So I'm like, oh, maybe this will just be something that I can hand down that they can read to their kids if they have kids.
That's good.
So.
What is a piece of advice that you would give someone for raising kids?
I think knowing boundaries, like kids need set boundaries, even though they don't always agree with them. Like, I think having, you know, good bedtimes, good rules, having, you know, set times like breakfast, lunch, dinner. I know that around holiday times things get a little hectic, but otherwise we usually have, you know, breakfast. Set schedules. Kids do the best when you have set schedules. I think exposing them to a lot of things at an early age, like, you know, like we took Phoebe to the public market, you know, when she was like months old, you know, in the carrier. So don't stop doing the things you love just because you have kids. Expose the things that you love to your kids. And if your kids like something new, I'm always trying to, you know, the kids have gone to a lot of different camps and different classes, like at the art gallery and writers, like Phoebe's taken things at Writers and Books and the Eastman House. And, you know, expose kids. It makes me sad when I hear that kids have never been to the art gallery here and things like that. Like, Phoebe was in class one day and they're like, oh, what did you do on break? And they're like, she's like, oh, I went to the art gallery. And they're like, we have an art gallery here? And I'm like, oh my God, that's just so sad, right?
Yeah.
I think so many families, and maybe that's a bad thing, is we're not like a sports-minded family. It just seems like there's so much emphasis in school to support sports and not the arts. And, you know, that's just one facet of life. But can you imagine if you lived a life where you didn't have differences, where you didn't have theater and plays and music? I'm not a dance, but I can I'm not a dancer, but I can appreciate the talent that goes into that. And if you didn't have all of those different facets in life, how boring life would be. And if we just had, you know, sports. It just seems like that's just such an emphasis in school. You know, you don't get those big scholarships for like painting. Yeah. You get them for kicking a ball around, right? Yeah. It just seems kind of silly to me. One of my favorite authors is Kurt Vonnegut. And he wrote a book called Bluebeard, which is one of my favorite books. And in it, this artist gets paid these millions and millions of dollars for creating these big, huge murals, right? So that corporations buy. Yeah. So they're like 20 feet by 40 feet. So they're huge that, you know, they show off in their corporate headquarters and stuff like that. And in the story, the artist, because he's painting canvases so large, he actually uses house paint. He doesn't go and buy small tubes of paint and everything because they're these huge canvases. And it was, he painted them like in the 60s or 70s or something. And these corporations paid him millions of dollars. And one day they walk in and the paint had deteriorated. Like, it was never meant to be like a canvas type paint. So it was like in shreds on the floor, like it had shredded off the canvas. So it's just ironic that they paid millions of dollars for this painting that didn't last. So like the point is that like all of this stuff where in society we have like paintings that are going for millions of dollars and sports people that get paid millions of dollars for kicking a ball around when there's people starving and, you know, people that don't have houses and countries that are so poor that they can't afford medicine and vaccines and what, you know, safe water to drink, that life is skewed when that's happening, you know, that, you know, they paid millions of dollars for this. Now they have nothing to show for it. Right. And the name of the paint was Sateen Duralux. Okay. So, on my tombstone, like, I don't want to get buried, but if I had to have a tombstone, all it would say on it would be Sateen Duralux, because nothing in life lasts. I just thought that was, you know, kind of funny. So
that's awesome. And this is, the book's called Bluebeard?
Yeah, by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. He's a pretty awesome
There's
author.
A high chance I'm going to try to find it and read it.
Oh, yeah. I can give you my copy if you want to borrow it. It's just awesome. It's very poignant. It's a, I don't want to give too much away, but it's really based on a woman that's a writer. And she moves in to write a book on him, but she moves in as his housekeeper. Okay. So he is unwittingly opening himself up for so much stuff, because it's not like she's going and interviewing him. This is a process that's taking a couple of years. Yeah. So can you imagine if you live with someone, because she's a live-in housekeeper,
what
you learn about someone, right? So it's a different, on a different level, but it is a really good book. He's just a really good writer. He writes people that are real. I started reading him when I was in high school, being very introverted. I was always in honors classes, and I never spoke unless the teacher called on me, but we had to read this book called Slaughterhouse-Five, Kurt Vonnegut Jr., and I loved it. Oh my gosh, it was so different from any other book that I'd written, you know, because you read like Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights and The Great Gatsby, and they're all kind of like really not my cup of tea as far as like, oh, and The Scarlet Letter. I don't know what they keep making you guys read the same horrible books. They were bad back then. So here is Kurt Vonnegut, and it's this guy who is like abducted by space aliens, and there's a lot of time travel, and it's about the bombing of Dresden, you know, so it talks about the horrors of war, and it was just so different from any book that I had ever read. So I totally fell in love with Kurt Vonnegut, but nobody in the class like understood it. And our teacher was asking us questions, and here I am raising my hand because I'm all excited because I like totally love this book, right? And she's like, oh my God, Michelle. She's like, you're actually talking? Because, you know, I never talked.
Yeah.
But he's raw. Like, he would swear in his books. So totally different again from anything that I'd ever experienced in school, right? Required reading-wise. but really loved him.
Yeah. Those are all the questions I have. But is there anything else you would like to say?
Oh, no, I guess not. I just wanted to thank you for interviewing me. I'm really honored. I value this time I've had with you. So thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you so much for being willing to be interviewed. And it was great getting to know you better than I already do.
Thanks.